Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Did you hear the one about the CEO who joked in an email that he should be paid for his holidays in lieu, but the nuance of the gag was missed by the finance director, who took the ball and ran with it to the point that the CEO was paid the money he had only jokingly asked for, pushing him over his allowable salary under the terms of a state bailout, leading to the suspension of state funding for the football body in question, and ultimately landing them in front of a government committee where the president of the association states publicly that his confidence in his CEO has been shaken. This sounds insane, but this is the FAI we're talking about, and these were events that were discussed on the podcast today. Hey, Murph.
On. Just check your belief in at the door.
We didn't really know what was going to come from today's appearance in front of the Public Accounts Committee. So we recorded the rest of the podcast, chatting to Jonathan Wilson and Rory Smith. We'll play a bit of that later on. And we said, listen, we'll leave the end of the show free.
Yeah, after just that in case.
And we'll hang on to see if anything happens at the Iraq to see what goes on there. I'm glad we did. That's all I'll say. I'm glad we did. Gavin Cooney was on the ground at the Iraq today.
So I started working for the 42 in 2019. That's Iraq this committee number 8 in a time I've seen the Irish men's team win 9 competitive games.
Oh, it's close.
And in fairness, only 4 of them are against Gibraltar.
Jesus Christ.
It's not gone well, really.
No, and it's fairly
didn't
depressing.
It seemed to go very well for the FAI today. So what were they being asked about?
Yeah, so they were in alongside with Sport Ireland before the Public Accounts Committee. This was scheduled after the joint Iraq to Sport Committee meeting last December. You might remember that was dominated by the talk of the holiday pay that Jonathan Hill erroneously received and had to pay back to ensure that state funds were unfrozen. The FAI did hope to go in and talk all about their proposal to raise the betting levy to 3% to get some budgeted investment in the sport, but sadly they didn't get to raise that point because once again a conversation dominated around that issue of the payment to Hill around his holiday days, and specifically on the matter as to whether he asked for it or not.
Okay, well, let's hear a bit of what he had to say then himself. This is the FAI's CEO, Jonathan Hill, speaking.
You'll see that an email was sent to me, actually in mid-November, which came from the junior employee we're seeking to protect from a legal perspective, just to make that clear. In that email, I am asked if I agree to a request from that junior colleague to commute holidays that the employee could not take, for exceptional circumstances, to a cash payment. And I accept that you can't see the words in the redacted statement, but that is for legal reasons. But within that, just to explain, both the then finance director and the COO had agreed to this request already, and that's referenced in the email. So I too agreed to it, although that was not a formal approval, as due process would need to be followed. Within that response, I am comfortable, because it doesn't relate to the junior employee, in saying that I added a throwaway line to that junior colleague saying, can you negotiate the same for me, please? ! For me, it's clear that this was not a formal request, and it was in an email back to the junior colleague. I copy the then finance director to the note, as he had done. He obviously takes that line as a request and uses that email chain to go himself to the then chair. From then on, I am not part of that process, although I am asked 5 weeks later, as would be normal at the end of the year, how many days holiday I have taken. I reply and ask what is happening with them, saying clearly that I would be happy to carry them over. The then finance director, who has copied on that mail, continues the discussion with the chair and with the other people in the emails that you sent.
Can I just pause you at that point? Yeah. So are you suggesting that the email received from us, it says from Alex O'Connell on the 5th of December 1541, and in the second paragraph it says Jonathan requesting to be paid out his unused holidays. Are you suggesting that Mr. O'Connell was incorrect in taking that line that you say in an email I can't see, that he was incorrect in taking that as a request?
Well, I can't comment for him in relation to whether he was incorrect
You said that was his interpretation
of the line that I have just explained to you, which isn't in the redacted emails, but that was his interpretation of it.
You're suggesting that Mr. O'Connell did not read your instruction correctly, that a joke in an email went on to become a formal process?
I'm not saying that, but it's clear from the emails that that is what happened.
You either requested it or you didn't. You request it?
And I'm saying that it was a throwaway line the email, which he then interpreted.
OK, let me put it a different way. Do you think it was reasonable for Mr. O'Connell to believe it was a request?
I think it was simply Mr. O'Connell's interpretation of the line.
It's an extraordinary situation to put a fellow colleague in, to come before a joint Oireachtas committee and to put all of the blame for all of this on a misinterpretation of a line you inserted in your email. Do you accept, as the Chief Executive Officer, the onus is on you to have been more clear and more reasonable and also to have prevented it?
Jeepers.
So it was all a misunderstood joke. That's the explanation here.
The exclamation mark wasn't understood in the way it was intended.
Yeah.
If he'd added a winking eye emoji, do you think it would have been clearer?
Perhaps.
That's all this is missing, really, isn't it? Like, if it's an emoji just at the end of the question mark and the exclamation mark, just to really muddy the waters.
And we don't know whether there was an exclamation or an emoji in there because the whole thing was redacted.
Yeah.
So obviously the email was sent in. The context of this is that back in that initial Oireachtas committee meeting, Jonathan Hill was asked, did you ask for this? And he insisted, I did not ask for this money. I did not push for it. Alan Dillon was sceptical, called it a cock and bull story and wanted to see the emails to prove that. The emails didn't arrive till 8:45 this morning, 45 minutes before the committee starts. Everything is meant to be in the day before. Like, the FAI were given 21 days notice to have this meeting. And they tried unsuccessfully to have it postponed. And the whole thing was redacted. The FAI are saying that we redacted it under legal advice to protect the identity of the junior employee. But the chair, Brian Stanley, said, we get lots of redacted emails in here. Nothing as redacted as this. Would it not have been sufficient to redact the person's name? But even if you want to redact everything else, why redact that line? Yeah. The key line, the throwaway line that he's happy enough to read into the record under questioning. Why not just, if you're going to tell them about it, why not just show them it on the piece of paper? Like, and then like stuff like, you know, like Martin O'Neill's Ireland weren't as passive as some of the language that he's used there. Like the Alex O'Connell, the former director of finance, CC'd on the email. He interpreted this as a request, and all of a sudden it was done. He went to the chairman, Roy Barrett. Roy Barrett went to one or two board members. One board member, Liz Joyce, said it's not best practice, it shouldn't happen. Roy Barrett decided to do it anyway and didn't tell the full board until the 1st of November this year. He got the money in March. The board didn't know about it until November, at which point it had all kicked off when he realised, oh my God, we're in danger of losing state funding here. But take a step back. The entire explanation for this, even if it's completely fair and accurate, is this money came about because of a misunderstood joke. Well, what's not a joke is that the FAI are waving documents in front of the government looking for €893 million of investment for 15 years. And they've been dragged to committees twice to explain this and can't even unredact the line, the key line to all of this.
It's just going to read into the record anyway.
Yeah, and the other key point to make about this is that Alex O'Connell and Aoife Rafferty, the HR director, they were on this email chain. Sorry, Alex O'Connell was on the initial email chain with the throwaway line. Aoife Rafferty was then on email chains with Roy Barrett and Alex O'Connell, in which this ended up being granted. They were both invited, and it does appear from the questioning to Tony Cuahan, the chairman, from Alan Dillon, that the FAI decided that it was best for them not to come. that Tony Cahan's line was, we figured that the delegation here were the most appropriate to explain the situation. And Alan Dillon said, well, that was a misjudgment on your part because they were key witnesses. Tony Cahan rejected that. But again, in the interest of transparency, if the Public Accounts Committee want witnesses there, the FAI, in my opinion, and it's not just my opinion, I think it'd be widely shared, should be doing everything they can to facilitate the people invited that they turn up.
There's another strong clip here. This is from Paul McAuliffe speaking here first to Jonathan Hill and then turning his attention to Paul Cook, FAI president.
It's an extraordinary situation that an organisation would somehow, in a train of emails, pick up on what is a throwaway line, that they would then initiate a process to cost that organisation money, that without any recourse to you, they would build a case that meant it was exceptional and unusual that you should receive this in breach of your own organisation's HR guidelines, in breach of what is best practice in terms of employee relations, in breach of perhaps legislation, that they would do all of that on their own and that you would not, you had no part in any of that. That they did all of that on their own.
I understand your position, I understand your statement, but that is, that's the situation.
Yeah. Like, Mr. Cook, it's a very difficult situation for you as president, with all of the members, to hear Mr. Hill outline a scenario that I think is incredibly difficult to believe. Do you have confidence in Mr. Hill?
I think under Jonathan we've made great strides so far in the organisation. I have confidence that we can continue to make great strides as a board and the senior leadership team going forward.
Mr. Cook, I hear you choosing your words correctly, and everyone should do that before an ROCS committee. You have confidence in the board, you have confidence in the senior leadership team, you're confident that the FAI will make progress. My question was, do you have confidence in Mr. Hill, given the evidence that has been presented here this morning?
I have confidence in the senior leadership team and the board going forward.
Okay. I don't want to continue to press you the same question. When you say you've confidence in the leadership team and you're not answering the question that you've confidence in Jonathan individually, can I infer some
I think Jonathan's part of the senior leadership team.
So you have confidence in Mr. Hill?
I have confidence in the senior leadership team.
Do you have confidence in Mr. Hill?
I have confidence in the senior leadership team and the board to continue the progress that we're making.
I appreciate you're serving in a role. You know, it's an important role. It's important to target supporting volunteers. They want you to know, do you have confidence in Mr. Hill, who's paid a significant amount of money on behalf of the sport?
My confidence has certainly, by the fact, has been challenged by the events.
There you go. That's the president of the FAI telling an Oireachtas hearing, after a certain amount of obfuscation, that his confidence in his CEO has been challenged by these events.
Yeah, now the chairman, Tony Cahan, said he did have confidence in Jonathan Hill, but did admit that this was a slip-up, which is a generous language to use, and also that he did acknowledge there had been reputational damage. So again, this is one of the big issues. I mean, this is a circus, in front of the country. We've got the recently elected president sitting beside the CEO in the Houses of Parliament saying, my confidence in him has been shaken. It's the FAI are made to undoing all their good work by, look, a complete joke.
Is it the old line about Watergate again, though, that like the scandal is one thing, but how you react to the scandal is as important, and in this case maybe even more important?
Yeah.
You know, that this payment in lieu of holidays is an issue. It's not a gigantic issue by the standards of the FAI. It wouldn't make it top 20 probably, you know.
Yeah.
But the fact that they come in with redacted emails like this, the idea that this level of obfuscation is just taken for granted, like kind of forget about like the detail of what happened today. It's just for people looking on the outside, it's like, fucking hell, like the FAI again.
The FAI at it again. I mean, they're in low esteem across the country for the correct reasons, going back a number of years. And everyone in there was working pretty hard to change that around, but this stuff completely undermines it. And any GAA person or horse racing person or someone from another sport who will look at the FAI looking for money that, in my opinion, they deserve because of the neglect of the sport going back decades, largely the FAI's own fault, but however, anyone who looks at that and says, oh, they're out for the begging bowl, we don't know where the money will go, all this stuff, you know, is absolutely enforces negative views of the FAI out there. On your initial point, I think so, yeah. Like, look, maybe like €12,000 in holiday pay. It was paid back €12,000 in the context of an organization with a turnover of about €50 million. It's a small amount of money. Processes broke down. Roy Barrett did not go about things in the right way, in my opinion, by not fully informing the board. But it had been dealt with. But now this kind of this lack of transparency over how it came about is baffling to me. And if, I mean, the FAI want the country to swallow the idea, this all came about because I joked to a junior employee to which the finance director was privy, and then all of a sudden I got the money. If you're gonna ask the rest of us to believe that, and many committee members did not, then you have to show the damn line. I mean, why did they redact it? I mean, that's the most frustrating thing about it.
How much pressure is Jonathan Hill under now, do you think?
I think he is under pressure. It's obvious if the president is in the Oireachtas saying his confidence is shaken, it's not lost. Other people did back him. The new chairman, Tony Keohane, does appear to be backing him. I know Jonathan Hill's position was weakened by this a few months ago because, if you remember, he was in front after that gender balance vote among the Assembly. It didn't pass initially. He began that by saying we have to pass this because our state funding is at risk, not disclosing the fact that it had already been suspended over this issue. There are people in Ireland who will never get over the fact that he doesn't live here. He said in the committee today he aims to get over from England to the office 4 days a week. That's been accepted by the FAI. Some people don't think that's a problem. Other people do. But this, you know, he's been front and centre here of a day that's degraded the image of the FAI and as a result affected their long-term plans on which everyone involved in football is dependent.
This is the most annoyed I've actually seen you with the FAI probably since we've started talking to you.
Well, it's just that fucking Gibraltar stat, you know.
I know, stop. Well, can I ask you this last quick one then? Is this an and finally funny? It's not really, isn't very funny either, but how does this all hit the Irish manager search? I mean, we already knew this was going to be a mad week for the FAI. Now there's going to be the fallout from all this to deal with for the next while, yeah, while they're trying to appoint a manager.
Yeah, well, look, it at least gets the managerial search off the headlines, which I guess is one thing achieved. Who knows? I mean, I assume everything will go on as to whatever extent things have been happening up to now. But like, you know, I hope there are no throwaway lines given to Lee Carsley, shall we say.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're Gurban Gurbanov and you decide to Google FAI.
Speaking of which,
what's this about? Yeah.
It's 2:45. I think they're kicking off. I think Carbag are off about half five, I think, today.
It's half five.
Against, well, against Braga in the second
leg. He's sitting on the bus. Junior coaches are taking care of the warm-up.
Let's go home and watch that one. Yeah, brilliant stuff from Gavin there, as always, but he was particularly exercised today, as I pointed out to him at one stage. He was quite angry with the whole thing. I'm going to pick up on one thing. I forgot to do it at the time, so I'm going to do it now. He says that this is going to take the headlines away from the Ireland manager search.
Yeah.
Not on this podcast, because I did throw a name out today.
Well, I'm sure
what
that
was it again? I have to remember the fella's name again.
Don't worry about it, Owen. I'm sure I remember.
Yagoba. Yeah, it is. It's Yagoba Arrizate.
That's it.
Yagoba Arrizate, 45-year-old Osasuna manager, took them to the top division in Spain, reached the Copa del Rey final a couple of years ago, got them into Europe. More than anything else, he has got the big thumbs up, and the reason he's in our brains, Beñat Gutiérrez, our Basque and also Spanish football correspondent, I should probably say.
Yeah.
has recommended him to us. He's handing him, the FAI need not worry about doing any more work on this. He's handing this guy up to us on a platter. He can put in the word, I'm sure, as well. And we'll have our manager.
Yeah, Owen. I just feel like, what's wrong with you? Why are you taking this job? Would be literally my first two questions.
In the press conference.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? Why aren't you taking Gary O'Neill's job at Wolves,
yeah.
I mean, the last one is Bournemouth. Wherever Gary O'Neill is now, they need some sort of Basque manager in there who's going to take the job.
Yeah, now, he's too good for us. I'd never heard of him until this morning, but I know that he's too good for us.
Well, Ken is back in money. It feels at this stage as though we will not have a manager appointed by the time Ken goes back from his holidays on Monday. As Irish football continues to lurch into crises, the redevelopment of Casement Park in Belfast received a boost this week with the news that the Irish government was committing €50 million to the project. Branagh wants me to point out that he took part in the following conversation before today's FAI fiasco. If only he'd known the FAI was not the most efficiently run organisation, perhaps he wouldn't have been so hard on the GAA here.
Yesterday, I think, was a momentous day on the island. I think the DUP looked out and said, there's a constituency for us if this United Ireland thing ever happens. And that constituency, Owen, was not right-wing Catholics and people with illiberal social views. It was League of Ireland fans. who also might contain some right-wing Catholics and people with liberal social views. Yeah, so, you know, Leo Varadkar was on RT last night. He said it would be a real shame if there was no Euro 2028 games in Northern Ireland. I'm not too sure why it would be a real shame. I thought the announcements yesterday were really good. The A5 road, which I've travelled a lot to Derry, you know, and a lot of people have died on. Yeah. You know, they're going to pump money into finally fixing that, hopefully. And then they're going to do like some, you know, big projects like the bridge over Narrow Water and stuff like that. But back to your question, it's just the semantics, I suppose, around the Republic's government pledging 50 million to Casement Park Stadium in Belfast. And as I said, I do think the government in Dublin should give money to infrastructure in the north. It's just football stadiums and football academies, as Damien Duff outlined yesterday when he was talking to the press, and as we have outlined a couple of times in the recent past on the show, are in bits in Ireland.
Well, the timing of it was interesting because Canham, I think, was actually giving his presentation about the football pathways when the news broke about 50 million going.
Yeah.
Winging its way up north.
Well, it's not the up north bit that has me. It's the, this is another GAA stadium getting millions and millions. And to be honest, I actually don't think Casement Park will be finished or Euro 2028 will be played there. You know, I think the DUP are going to veto it. It's like the cost also. Chris Heaton-Harris yesterday came out and said, at the same time, like, there was a lot of people saying stuff yesterday. He said yesterday that, like, you know, the UK taxpayer, the bucket of money isn't infinite. So, you know, it's gone from like 90 million, I think, up to now proposed 220 million to redevelop, which was about 1,800 a seat, it works out with the capacity. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's more just, you know, the League of Ireland this Friday night, and again, I get accused of Dublin bias, but like, there's two big games in Dublin this Friday night, Shells Rovers, Pats Bowes, both sold out in like 5 minutes when the general sale tickets went on sale on Monday. That's 10,000 people at these games in unfit for purpose stadiums. Like, and it's not GAA bashing, but again, it's like, this is another big tranche of money to a GAA stadium.
Kind of sounds like GAA bashing there, Murph.
That's just like, we were discussing a couple of weeks ago about a big stadium in Cork that they can't pay off, you know?
If you're a taxpayer, if you're like a non-sports loving or a multi-sports loving taxpayer, you have to say, what the hell is actually going on here, you know? Now, Casement Park is being built too big for anything other than Euro 2028. I think that's becoming increasingly clear. The fact that the Ulster final has gotten 34,000 people a couple of times in the last couple of years because Derry have come back into prominence in Clonus. The fact of the matter is, the GAA is currently doing everything in its power to weaken and demean the Ulster Championship and by extension the Ulster final. Casement is now a mess, right? It's a complete mess. It's a GAA stadium being built for a soccer tournament for the benefit of Northern Irish football fans who won't go to the ground because of its location and its history, you know? So over the course of the next kind of 10 years, you're looking at the Leinster Rugby want to redevelop the RDS. Mm-hmm. Bulls want to redevelop Daly Mount. Shells want to keep playing in Talca Park. And Dublin GAA really should do something with Parnell Park because you're looking at whatever it is, a 12, 13,000 seater stadium for the richest county board, or at least the county board with the highest turnover in of the 32, without a stadium that's even remotely comfortable for people to go and watch games in. That's four grounds in Dublin that all need work. Mm. And I see no way for any of the four of them to share with any of the others. I mean, Bulls and Shells is the one that you would look at and say, right, well, that makes the most sense.
Not happening.
But it's not happening.
Yeah.
It's definitely not happening.
It's definitely not happening. 100% not happening.
So all of these lessons, like, I look at the Connacht.
Bulls don't even know where they're going to play when Dalymount, as it is getting redeveloped.
Yeah. So you look then at Connacht are redeveloping the showgrounds. Makes a degree of sense, sure. Galway United are back in the Premier Division. Eamon DC Park is small. Maybe it's the right capacity, but I mean, it was sold out last week for Pats. And maybe, you know, John Coughlin's going to lead them into Europe, you know. But we have Pier Stadium on the other side of Galway, very seldom full, very seldom gets a crowd over 20,000.
Great stadium.
But it's not a great, it, like, it's
I
a,
really like it. Yep.
Yeah, it's a grand stadium in that it's like your typical cookie cutter GAA ground.
Windy.
Stand on one side, terraces on the three other sides. The idea is that on the very rare occasion that that there are more people going to games in this ground than the stand can hold, they can just stand, and that's it. Would it not make more sense? All that, the money that has gone into that is going to be given to College Rugby, and I know they're fundraising a bit of it themselves, of course. The money that may be put into in the future Eamon DC Park, just put it all into Pearce Stadium. Have the three sports all playing in the same ground. And actually have comfort. Like, I'm not talking about, you know, the home of the Dallas Cowboys here.
Probably with URC, League of Ireland, and, you know, league hurling and league football games, there's probably a lot going for one stadium maybe in Galway.
Yeah.
But I do accept your point that, like, we've all these cities now dotted around the islands with, like, a stadium for each, to cater for each sport.
Yeah, and so
and not even just in the, like, the sectarian nature of Belfast.
Yeah.
It's in Galway where you have to have the stadium for each sport.
But so,
well, in Dublin, because you're saying, oh, well, obviously Bows and Shales can't possibly share a stadium, even though it would appear.
Well, no, we were all, Bows and Shales were on for sharing a stadium, and, you know, Shales pulled out of that because they felt their identity would be, you know, subsumed in Fisburgh, which is half an hour.
So you can't even, we can't even make that happen in, with two Dublin clubs. You
two
know,
Dublin clubs in the league of
in the same sport.
Yeah, in the same sport.
Yeah.
So,
is this not Irish, where the government comes in and says, look, we're the government?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, and also, all the governments have only ever asked off GA grounds in the past, right? And this is why it's been so effective in the GA. This is why so many GA clubs own their own grounds, why so many GA county boards own their own grounds and have been able in the past to build at a scale that has, you know, benefited their fans and has been good enough for their fans, is that the government haven't asked anything of the GA other than that, remember us on election day. Mm. That's the only question that the GA have ever, that's the only, like, requirement that they have put on all the money that they've put into infrastructure in the country, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, there's still a GA rule. There's still a rule in the GA rule book that says it has to be used for GA purposes, you know, that all these grounds have to be used for GA purposes. There was a situation in Ballygunner GA club a couple of years ago where the local soccer club was using its indoor training hall for training over the winter. In every conceivable way, this is just brilliant news. The soccer club gets to train through the winter without wrecking its pitch. The GA club gets the rental fees. It's taking money from the soccer club in rental fees for the use of the hall. The kids are well served. They can train 12 months a year and work on their skills. An anonymous tipster got on to that's the phrase. An anonymous tipster got on to Croke Park to say this was happening and it's in contravention of rule. And Ballygunner had to hold their hands up and say, listen, I'm sorry. Like, we are in contravention of rule. Like, we are breaking the rules of the GA by doing this. As it stands, that's the scenario. That instead of the GA being able to say, or instead of the government being able to say, sure, you get this money, but the money has to be for the entire community.
Yeah.
It can't be for the Fear Gaels in the GA club, and that's it. If you fundraise by yourself and you pay for it by yourself, in the same way that if Bulls were able to pay for Daily Mount or Skerry's Rugby Club were able to fundraise and commit to development of their grounds, if you do all that yourself, then that's fine. You're the one with the keys to the gate. You can open it or close it however you see fit. The second you take government funding of any kind, national lottery funding, any of that, the second you do that, you have to talk to the other community groups in your community and say, let's work something out.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hold up. banged to the head.
This was given to me by one of these guys, right here. Was a hell of a rugby player. And they beat the hell out of black and tan.
Defense of the realm, mate.
It's the bang to the head.
How many times have you lick bastards been told, eh?
Followed by another bang to the head.
Anyone wearing orange is not welcome in.
Mr. Biden, a quick word for the BBC.
I've not put my hand in my pocket since I left. They paid me £500.
BBC, I'm Irish.
If any fool wants to pay me £500 for gibber and jabber, I'll take his money.
I promised you some Rory Smith and some Jonathan Wilson.
You did, on. And if you don't deliver, I swear to God, I'm going to go over there and I'm going,
what bit did we pick out here? I'm trying to think what pick.
Sorry.
I know what bit we picked out. It's the stuff about Liverpool and ultimately also a bit of Manchester United chat here as well. We had, just before the bit where we pick it up, I had mentioned that Jurgen Klopp had compared last night's 4-1 victory against Luton to, somewhat ridiculously, to the 4-1 against... Was 4-0. 4-0 against Barcelona. Yeah, their big Champions
it's
League
comeback.
It's
this team's Barcelona night.
Yeah, it's interesting that you have three major clubs in Europe whose managers we know are leaving at the end of the year in Bayern, Barcelona and Liverpool. And the mood is very different at all three. And I think we have a tendency to sort of... apply sort of one-size-fits-all philosophy. So, oh yeah, if a manager's leaving at the end of the season, we think back what happened with Alex Ferguson in 2001, that means that the players start to think, oh yeah, what am I doing with my future? They're less committed and there's a bit of drift. Well, that can happen. But also, you can have the players thinking, right, forget the future, this is about the next 3 months, 3.5 months, and getting the best possible finish for Klopp. Who's done so much for so many of those players. The fans clearly will have that sentiment, and there is a sort of a wildness. Yeah, it's like the wildness come back to Liverpool. I think it was toned down for a while, and now they feel like a team who are quite happy to go behind and then score 4 in the second half. And is it now 22 points they've won from losing positions this season, which is a ridiculous number. You get into United 98-9 numbers. But there's this sense of, destiny in football is one of those strange things that it doesn't exist until people start to believe it does. And then maybe it does just gives you an extra 5% that makes opponents sort of think, oh, hang on, it detracts 5% from them because they're thinking, it's Liverpool's this season. So, clearly beating Luton 4-1 is pretty much par for Liverpool, even though Luton have been playing better recently. But to do it having been one...
And a lot of injuries. I mean, this is exactly, they're missing most of their starters.
But to do it having been 1-0 down at half-time and with essentially a full team out, that does become very impressive. And I think the other thing, and I don't know who would be responsible for this, but that game was played because Liverpool were playing in the League Cup final on Sunday. Whoever it was who got that game put on last night, rather than waiting, has done a great job, because what that does is it stops City going top at the weekend. It means that does it make a difference? I don't know, but the fact Liverpool now know they'll be top going into next week, they're not suddenly having to play catch up even if they've got a game in hand, the fact they're not accumulating fixtures for later in the season when they may have Europa League and FA Cup and as well as the Premier League, getting that game out of the way and getting it won is a hugely positive thing. And I'm not entirely clear why Chelsea couldn't have played Tottenham last night and also done that. Less relevant to them because they're obviously not in the title race, but it seems to me that getting that game done as quickly as possible was absolutely the right thing to do.
I think the emotion of it was related to just how sort of threadbare Liverpool's resources are at the moment. I think it sounds like a couple of the absentees last night are precautionary ahead of the Carabao Cup final. I think if they'd really, if that had been Man City at home, I suspect Nunez and Salah would have made it. But they are kind of bare bones at the moment, Liverpool. And what's really interesting about this sort of transition from the Klopp era to the post-Klopp era is there is a piece of received wisdom that dynastic managers automatically lead to a drop-off, that as though there's a yin and a yang within football, and that if you have the benefit of someone like Alex Ferguson or Arsene Wenger or Jurgen Klopp, that the punishment for that, the kind of karmic punishment for that, is is that, you know, you don't have 3 years in the wilderness or whatever, or 10 years in the wilderness, however many it might be. But I think if you actually look at Liverpool, that they have got a crop of young players coming through who won't all be superstars, but will certainly either be, you know, squad filler or, you know, contenders to play in the first team, or will be sold for decent amounts of money. You saw, it's not obviously Conor Bradley's the one who's caught the eye, but, you know, Jarrell Kwanzaa's come in as a fourth choice centre half, and to be honest, saved Liverpool probably 25-30 million quid. Does that sound much you have to pay for a backup central defender? Same as Bradley, even if his future is as Trent Alexander-Arnold's deputy, that's saving a load of money in the transfer market. It solves a problem. James McConnell's played a little bit. Jaden Danz, who is the son of Neil Danz, the former kind of football lead stalwart, he came on last night. There's new signings who've bedded in and starting to look good. Alexis McAllister, Dominic Szoboszlai before the injury. You do look at this Liverpool team and think, whoever they get as manager, and that's a slightly different subject, I think there's a risk that if you don't get Alonso that anything feels like an anticlimax, then they are kind of in a position of strength. And I'm not sure you could say the same for the Manchester United that Ferguson left behind, or the Arsenal that Wenger left behind. They obviously certainly hit greater heights than Klopp has. He achieved more than Klopp has. There's no question about that over a greater period of time. But I think in the couple of years prior to leaving, I don't think anyone at United was doing anything to think about the long-term future, to prepare the squad regardless of who the manager was, because Fergie's focus was on winning that final title, you know, going out with glory, and he'd earned that absolutely. Wenger, I think, had become so sort of bogged down in proving his own point to himself that he'd lost sight to an extent of what he was trying to achieve. Whereas Liverpool, whether they win the title this season or not, they've got an awful lot of young players who look like they've got a lot of space to grow, regardless of whether Klopp's there or not.
Yeah, I mean, there is an excellent chance here, though, Jonathan, that Xabi Alonso is not going to be the Liverpool manager. Because, I mean, I don't know much about German football, but I do know that any player or manager who goes around beating Bayern usually ends up at Bayern. And now, of course, Bayern have a vacancy to fill.
They do,
this summer.
But I don't know. I mean, it would seem to me...
Well, Klopp didn't, to be fair. Jurgen Klopp didn't end up there.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem to me a step backwards for Xabi Alonso. It's like if you win the Bundesliga with Leverkusen, you've done it on extra hard mode. Why are you going to then step back and try and do it again on easy mode? It just doesn't make any sense. And I also think... You know, quite apart from the fact that it just doesn't, it seems in terms of his development as a coach that it would be a very unambitious step. I think this Bayern might actually be quite a hard club to manage. Yeah, you look at that squad, and yeah, they have clearly good young players in Musiala. Yeah, Sane is not that old. Alphonso Davies, although I know he's been linked with Real Madrid, there are good young players there. But they still seem very reliant on that core of Neuer and Thomas Müller and Goretzka and Kimmich. And, okay, Goretzka and Kimmich are 29-30, but both of their levels have dropped off significantly this year. Kimmich seems to be behaving in the classic sort of Bayern Munich star way of being an absolute pain to everybody and being kind of incredibly prickly in interviews. Yeah, Müller kind of is now sort of the elder statesman, seems to be calming things down. I think that's a squad that needs a bit of work on it. And it's not going to be easy work to dislodge one, two, three, or four of those sort of established stars. So, maybe if you've been in the German milieu, maybe you look at this differently. But Bayern doesn't look to me a particularly attractive job, either in terms of what you'd be walking into, or in terms of potential gains to your reputation if you're a young coach like Xabi Alonso. Liverpool would seem to me a far, far more exciting prospect than, as I say, trying to just do the same things you've done this season, but on a much easier mode.
I think if you look at... Yeah, that makes complete sense to me. And the other thing that's significant, I think, is probably the optics. Obviously, Alonso does have a link with Munich and a emotional attachment to Bayern, which is completely legitimate and I'm sure is a factor. But I think it would look a bit... What's the word? It would look a bit off almost if he you know, beats Bayern, as Jonathan says, records this wonderful achievement and then is like, well, all right, I'm going to Bayern, bye. It feels a bit direct. The other thing that I think is relevant, if he's as talented a coach as he appears to be, is he will get his chance at Bayern just as he will get his chance at Real Madrid. Those jobs do come up even in good times, once every 2 or 3 years. You know, Bayern have obviously been through, I think, 3 coaches in 3 seasons now, and that's unusual for them. But it's Bayern are very unlikely to go and appoint someone who they, you know, Sebastian Hoeneß isn't going to go from Stuttgart to Bayern and be there for the next 10 years. It will come up again in the near future, just as Real will come up when Ancelotti goes, and after Ancelotti goes, it will come up once every 2 seasons. Liverpool does come up more rarely, and I think that that will be a factor. The counterweight to that argument is that I think there are, in terms of his development as a coach, Bayern offers more silverware, than more guaranteed silverware than Liverpool, despite this season. And also a very good chance that you will be able to, you know, be in a Champions League semi-final pretty reliably for the next 2 or 3 years. So I think there are advantages to taking Bayern. But I would agree, my sense, and I'm slightly biased, my sense is that Bayern at the moment is not an especially attractive job, regardless of how attractive you find Liverpool. I think you look at Bayern and you think, is that a mess I want to have to oversee? Because you do need to transition away from that Müller-Neuer generation, and no one has been able to do it. And you know that winning the title doesn't necessarily guarantee you, you know, that doesn't buy you time or space. You kind of have to win the Champions League, and you kind of have to do it in a certain style. And as much as, you know, Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge and all the kind of power brokers at Bayern, of which there are a million, they all really like Xabi Alonso, and he's got a good relationship with them. We've seen before that doesn't save you if they turn. Hansi Flick had a great relationship with them, won the treble, and then as soon as the first hint of trouble, off you go. And that isn't, I'm not sure how attractive a proposition that is for someone who is quite a considered, kind of thoughtful, contemplative person around his career. Xabi Alonso said to me at least twice, a terrible name drop, but it is Xabi Alonso, so it's fine.
Well, there you go.
Like, he's not in a rush. I don't think he's not like Andre Villas-Boas, who wants to cram everything into a 5-7 year period so he can don't do the Dakar rally. Like, Xabi Alonso's not in a hurry. He wants to develop as a manager and do the best he can as a manager as long as it takes. And so I think he'll make the decision that is best for his development. And I find it really hard to believe that you'd look at Bayern and think that is the answer.
To listen to all of that and some more of Murph's thoughts on Jim Ratcliffe and his takeover, you should sign up now to the World Service and Second.
There are other better reasons than that, but that'll do.
Five for a month plus VAT. You'll also hear the episodes ad-free. You'll be supporting independent, member-led journalism.
That's true.
Look, it's just something you're half thinking of doing.
Some
of you have been thinking, oh, maybe I know I was signed up before, but I get enough with the Mondays and I get this on the Thursdays. Like, go for it. Just try it for 5 a month.
Come on, everybody.
See what happens.
I mean, if you don't like it, then that's fine, I suppose. So, but yeah. I really, really think you'll like it.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. Thanks, Owen.
Hey, Cass, great now.
That's the second time he's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.